continuing until October 15th. One thing the LSB may consider is what work it will want to complete between now until December, when newly elected board members will be seated. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, September 8th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Hope you will join us at the LSB. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM New York Radio. I'm your host, Milton Alamadi, also streaming on WBAI.org. Welcome to our show today. Today we want to look at the crises in Cameroon, very rarely covered in the U.S. media. There's, in effect, a very bloody war going on in Cameroon, a place where the federal government has actually decided to launch war upon its own people. And as we will discover, listeners, a lot of this can be traced to the legacy of colonial history in Africa, in that region in particular. So what else is new? This is what we've been looking at the last several weeks. And once again, we will look into the role that France is playing in this conflict. And to help us walk through this, I have with us today a guest who is from Cameroon, and her name is Ya Maggie Kilo. She is based now here in the United States. She lives in Texas. She is part of a network of women's organizations called Global Takumbang, and she'll explain what that means to us. And this organization is trying to publicize the conflict that is ongoing in her homeland and also trying to mobilize global relief for victims of this conflict. Welcome to Black Star News Show, Ya Maggie Kilo.
Thank you very much, Milton. It's good to talk to you today.
Thank you so much. Well, tell listeners, maybe a minute or two, just tell listeners who you are so listeners know who they're talking to. From Cameroon, but you've lived in the U.S. for a number of years. And in fact, you were located here in the U.S. And I mentioned this organization that you're part of in terms of coordinating, but you once also worked for the African Development Bank. So tell listeners who you are.
So I'm an educator by training, and I've been an international civil servant in several international finance institutions, World Bank and African Development Bank. And I studied here in the U.S. too. And now I'm retired and can't live in Cameroon because of the conflict. So I coordinate the women's groups of Global Tackenburg. And Tackenburg is actually a name for a traditional peace-seeking, advocating tradition that we have in Africa, where mostly postmenopausal women will demonstrate every time there's a crisis and seek the natural powers of the gods to solve whatever problem they are faced with. So we are using Tackenburg as the umbrella group of all the women's organizations that are working towards advocating for peace in Cameroon today. And it is Anglophone Cameroon.
Yes, of course. And I want you to explain to listeners that Cameroon is unique in the sense that there's a clear demarcation within the same country. One region was colonized by the French, and that is the north. And then there is a southern part that actually abuts into Nigeria, which is English speaking and was administered by the British during the colonial era. Is that correct?
That is correct. Most of Cameroon is French speaking. And we got the unfortunate choice during our independence. We were a trusteeship territory of the United Nations, governed by the United Kingdom, by Britain. But at independence, unfortunately, we were given the choice in a plebiscite to either join Nigeria or to join French Cameroon. And our forefathers were actually fleeing from an oppressive regime in Nigeria, and unfortunately went from the frying pan into the fire. So since the plebiscite in 1961, when we voted to join our in quotes, brothers of the French Cameroon, we found that it has not been good for our people. We've suffered a lot of marginalization since 1961.
Okay, and a lot of this is because the dominant part of the country, which was French colonized, has been trying to impose French language, French culture, French tradition on the English-speaking zone, and essentially has been marginalizing that part of the country for refusing to accept this French imposed narrative by the French dominant zone. Is that correct?
Well, our president, the current president of Cameroon, actually referred to us in his presentation at the Mo Ibrahim conference in 2019. He said, you know, we have a tiny minority of about 20% of these very troublesome Anglophones. We've been trying to assimilate them since 1961. And unfortunately, we have not succeeded.
Okay, I want to interrupt you for a minute, and I will allow you to continue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for listeners that listen to the kind of folks that listen to WBAI are conscious in most cases about these global events and the history of imperialism and colonialism. So when they hear you talk about your supposed president referring to his own people and talking about assimilation, it's so perplexing, particularly for Pan-Africans, because he's not even talking about assimilating back into African culture as a result of maybe the colonial legacy, but he's talking about assimilation into French culture. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I think that's what our people have been fighting against, that we have, if you would, if you wouldn't mind my analogy here, we have slaves enslaving other slaves.
Why should I mind? I think you've explained it in the way that listeners of WBA can understand. It is amazing where you have this European imperial power dominating African people for so long. And then even once they are physically gone, even though they still pull the levers of power, of course, through financing, now you have the Africans practicing that legacy of European imperialism upon other Africans. This is a very regrettable situation. But please tell us in terms of, because I've been reading about the bloody nature of this conflict. We are talking about, at one report I read, 20,000 people have died since the conflict intensified in 2016. But tell listeners first, what precipitated the upsurge in the violence of security forces against civilians in Anglophone part, number one? And then tell us how the numbers have escalated in recent months, not only the deaths, but the people that have been displaced within the country as well. Talk about that for a while.
So from 1961, since the plebiscite, we were supposed to be two federated states of equal standing. And but, you know, with the French in Africa, they've never really decolonized. So they still have a heavy hand over their colonies. The franc CFA, the French currency that we use, is tied to the French franc and to the euro. And all the economy is actually managed by France. The reserves of the countries are placed in the French treasury. So when we got into this union and were supposed to be two federated states, we had in southern Cameroons, in the British southern Cameroons, democratic systems, an economy that was functioning, security, cultural and traditional systems. We have the sectors of the economy well established and managed, great education system, agriculture that was thriving with a tradition of cooperatives. We had a legal system that was based on the British common law. And then we get into a system now where the French are still, the army of the French are still fighting a war in Cameroon, in the French-speaking part of Cameroon. This was a very long and brutal civil war, actually, that was led to the independence of French Cameroon. But immediately this federation was established, we found that there was a systematic decimation of the Anglophone country, that was southern Cameroon. So all the democratic systems, the economic systems, the traditional and cultural systems, and the very well-established sectors were slowly, slowly decimated. And basically, when in 2016, lawyers and teachers rose against the French imposition of French language, imposition of French culture, and imposition of everything French. There was very little English being spoken, and we just said no. There was a peaceful demonstration with peace plants, actually, which is a tradition of demonstration in southern Cameroon. And the administration simply decided that they would send the military. They've always done this. We've demonstrated to have our Anglo-Saxon University to maintain the GCE, the General Certificate of Education, and the very Anglo-Saxon education system. So every time that happened, you know, the military came in. But this time around, in 2016, it was really, really bad. The military just unleashed weapons on people in broad daylight, shooting people down. And, you know, the youth just said, no, we can't continue like this. And so they took up arms. But first, they took up catapults, stones. They took up the Dane guns that we use in festivals. And eventually, as they too were killing the military, they seized the weapons from the dead military and started shooting back. And then they got support from the diaspora.
As a result, there is actually now a full-fledged armed conflict in Cameroon.
Yes, and the boys are getting more and more sophisticated because now they are making IEDs, which fortunately for us, Biya and his government invested very little in our part of the country, even though we were providing 40% of the economy resources. They were investing only 5% in our region. So we don't have good roads. And this is helping the war effort, actually, because...
How ironic. And let me explain this, perhaps, to some of our listeners that may have not caught what you just said. Because the region was marginalized, neglected, and the corrupt government of Biya, and we'll get into him in a minute, did not build a decent road network, that is hampering the ability of the federal forces to dominate the region. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
I thought so. But now it also brings me to this other question then. Is this a road of no return now? Because when it gets to the stage where you have total armed conflict, they're not seeing themselves as part of the same country anymore. Is that not the case? So where are we heading?
So we can look at this from the perspective of Biya's government. At the beginning of the conflict, they said there was no Anglophone problem and that the young boys that were fighting back defending their communities from the military were going to be defeated in about 3 months. We are in the fifth year, and basically they've accepted, finally, that there is a small problem and that it's an internal matter, even though, as we can hear in the news, they are actually reaching an alliance with the government of Buhari in Nigeria to fight this war. So I think it's gotten to the place where there is no turning back. It's like, you know, there are two wars going on, the consistent, steady decimation of the institutions of government of the Southern Cameroons. That type of a war continues. But this one, the killing war, there's a lot of criminality that has come out of that, as we know when wars happen. So we are looking now to say, what do we do? Because Cameroon itself is a country that is in reverse development. It's in actually speedy decline. So we don't see ourselves going back to a place where we've been. It's like, you know, you go back to the place of your torture, rape, and arson, and all those evils that have come out of the Biya government.
Yeah, and some of this has been documented in terms of the killings, the rapes of young girls and mothers, the burning down of entire villages. In fact, the Norwegian refugee group has referred to this as the world's most neglected conflict. So you're basically saying the people of southern Cameroon want an independent state. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. If you speak with, if you speak to the people, they will tell you, even those in government who are representing that 20%, they will tell you it's not working. Cameroon is not working. It's a failed state. And we have in southern Cameroon the possibility of a thriving, resilient state, actually. And we want to see that happen because we just cannot leave our children the war and the legacy of war. It doesn't make sense for us to bequeath to our children that kind of a legacy.
Okay, so if somebody were to say, if this becomes an accepted solution in Africa, will we not have other situations? For example, we're looking at the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia, where the people of Tigray could also say, because of the attacks by the federal soldiers, that they're better off having a separate independent country. And there are many other possible scenarios all over Africa. Will this not take the continent backward instead of forward, which should be creating more larger African entities, in fact, so that Africa can be competitive with the industrial world that continues to exploit Africa? I want you to respond to that question, but I want you to hold your thought for a minute so I can just, listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Black Star News Show. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi, on WBI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBI.org. And today we're looking at the bloody ongoing conflict in Cameroon. Listeners, as you know, WBAI is 100% commercial free. That is how we're able to bring you these type of unique programs that you don't hear anyplace else. This discussion today on Cameroon, for example. But this means we rely on you, the listeners, to support us. So please do pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2950. Any contribution to WBAI will be put to good use. You can also adopt one of our shows or more than one, including Black Star News Show, as a buddy, in which case the money is taken from your credit or debit card on a monthly basis. And you can do that by going to give and then the number 2 and then WBAI.org. Now, back to our discussion with our guests. So, Yah Magi Kilo, if you could respond to that question I posed.
So, Southern Cameroon's independence was actually botched at the very beginning. In 1961, we should have been allowed to be independent as a separate country from Nigeria or from French Cameroon, rather than have this plebiscite, because no other country in Africa was given this kind of a choice of independence.
That's
and
correct.
We were also a thriving, very democratic country. We had had, before independence, a handover from one party to another, and that was not the case in many other countries. And when you look at the size of the country itself, I mean, I can count maybe even about 16 or more much smaller countries Benin, Togo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Sao Tome and Principe, Cape Verde, Guinea-Bissau, Burundi. You can see so many other countries, the Rwandas, that are much smaller. We have 8 million people in southern Cameroons, and we have the possibility of being not just a resilient and a thriving country. I mean, but you know, it's either we have that or we are in a mix of failed states, which we don't identify with. So I think that we should be given the opportunity to be a good shining star, a beacon on a hill in Africa, actually.
Okay, I think you've made your case, but I noticed you did not answer the question that I posed. Is there not a risk for other African countries as well? And would you not agree that at the end of the day, you being a person, an economist, and you understand how the global system works, that really in order for Africa to thrive, at the end of the day, we're going to need larger African entities and ultimately perhaps a United States of Africa, in fact, if we are to protect our resources? Or you're saying the two are not mutually exclusive?
And I'm actually saying the latter. The two aren't mutually exclusive, and the United States of Africa will thrive where countries are able to manage themselves in a way that the people, the population, can feel the freedoms and enjoy the wealth and have opportunity. And I don't think that a large mismanaged country helps the image of Africa at all.
You made a strong point there. Now, let me ask you two questions. First of all, you, I think, said that the, I just call him dictator, Paul Biya, because these elections are just not even real elections. So the dictator, Paul Biya, has now called upon Nigeria to help him fight against southern Cameroon. Did I hear that correctly?
In a way, yes. It's sort of indirect, but it's we're seeing that happening because we do have refugees in Nigeria who do not have a sense of security in Nigeria today because there is this alliance between Nigeria and Cameroon or related to the war, yes.
Okay, so this is unusual because Nigeria actually played a significant role years ago in helping to resolve the very bloody civil war in Liberia. Not only deploying soldiers as part of the West African forces, it was the largest contingent, the dominant contingent, and ultimately actually even making sure that Charles Taylor, eventually was no longer president of Liberia and set the country toward the path which is, it has reached today, a much, much better position than it ever was at that time. So we see Nigeria now playing a rather disruptive role?
It's unfortunate because Nigeria has actually played a very significant role in maintaining the stability of the Anglophone countries in West Africa. It's not just Liberia. The ECOMOG was also in Sierra Leone. So you have Sierra Leone and Liberia, and even in recent times, the Gambia, that has benefited from Nigeria's goodwill supervision.
Right. So why is there not a similar movement toward helping to resolve the conflict in Cameroon? Why is that?
Well, I think that it's kind of a neighborhood effect. If you see the five different neighborhoods of Africa, so Nigeria would have that goodwill relationship with the countries of West Africa. Cameroon is in Central Africa, and we used to consider ourselves as West Africa. We would love to actually go back into the West Africa family because we are the only Anglophone nation in Central Africa. And you can see that the Central Africa group, that neighborhood does not report on our issues, does not even recognize that they have Anglophones in there. I'm sure if you go to DRC Congo, you go to Chad, they will tell you that there are no English-speaking peoples in Central Africa. So we would like to get to a place where we get a good neighborhood, where we can feel the way things were in the 60s. And I just think that if there was that recognition in Central Africa that we exist as Anglophones, then the issue would have been addressed.
Hold that thought. Listeners, we take a short break now and we'll be right back with the second half of our show today. Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome back to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi, and today we're looking at the bloody ongoing conflict in Cameroon, which is hardly covered in the U.S. media. And with us today is Yah Maggie Kilo. She is very involved in activism, in trying to mobilize relief for the victims of the conflict. She's a trained economist, and she's been walking us through the crisis in the first half hour. So let's continue with the second part of the show now. Let's look a little bit at Paul Biya. Tell listeners how long this man has been in power and who sustains him in power. I read an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal. It was actually many months ago. And the article says this man does not even live in Cameroon. He lives in an expensive luxury hotel suite in Geneva. And he comes back occasionally to check on his country, one of the most corrupt leaders in Africa. Talk a little bit about Paul Biya. Why is he still there?
Well, the relations between Paul Biya and the people who are actually keeping him in power, the French or the Swiss or whoever, I don't know how to say, but I just don't feel that I want to get into to talk about a president who is not there for his country, who lives lavishly off his people, who does not develop his people. You see from the state of the roads, electricity, a lack of potable water, the education system is crumbling, the economy is crumbling, there is corruption and wars on several fronts. I mean, I really would prefer to talk about Southern Cameroons.
I understand. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for American listeners, they would want mm-hmm. to know the role of neocolonialism and imperialism as well, because that's where sometimes Americans who are interested enough in these issues can be mobilized to take some action, to get in touch with their elected representatives and say, why are Western countries helping to exacerbate or actually impose these conditions in an African country? So that is why listeners of WBI would be interested in knowing the French role. For example, which companies control the oil and where is most of the oil confined in the country?
Oh, the oil is actually located in the Southern Cameroons region between the southeast of Nigeria and Southern Cameroons.
You have most of the oil.
We have all the oil, not most of it.
So now yes. American listeners would understand exactly what is going on, why the killings of so many people in Southern Cameroon can be ignored by corporate media because corporations are benefiting from this horrendous conditions. So I'm glad we got to that. but go ahead. I want you to address some aspects of this conflict that I haven't asked you about and that I don't want us to run out without us touching on those points. And then I'm going to ask you about some possible solutions, but go ahead.
Okay, so basically, Paul Biya has been in power along with Ahidjo since 1960 when the French Cameroons became independent. And he's been there as a high-level official in Ahidjo's government and then taking over from Ahidjo. So there have been only two presidents in Cameroon since independence. Mm. And obviously, he's not developed the country. But what really affects us as English-speaking peoples is that we found ourselves with the choice at independence of either joining Nigeria or joining this French mess, and I call it a mess because most of the countries are failed states in that region. Remember, I talked about the neighborhood effect. So the Central African region is made up of countries that have been at war, that are not developing, and the fact that France actually controls the economy, controls who gets to be president. I mean, we saw the case of Gabon, where the father has handed over to the son. We saw the case of Chad very recently, where Idriss Deby was killed and sent, and his son immediately, Macron installed the son as president.
And he flew all the way. He flew all the way to make sure that it would happen. But please continue.
Right. So we have Bia now, who is quite old. And we are hearing that his own son, also Frank Bia, is being prepared to take over from him. But that is not where we want to be as Southern Cameroonians. We don't want to deal with their corruption. We don't want to deal with the French system. We want to be a successful country. We want to give Africa the image of a Rwanda, of a South Africa, of a country that is thriving. We don't want to be in the African disease of, you know, failure. We want to do well for ourselves, and we cannot do well for ourselves because we are being decimated as a people in many different ways. The first one is in the ways that our systems are being decimated by the French, and the economy, the traditions, everything is taken from us. But this one that they've come in to kill our people with weapons, traumatizing communities, burning villages, raping women, torturing men. We have all our leaders in jail. This was organized between Nigeria and Cameroon. Our leaders of the Southern Cameroons were in Nigeria as refugees. I mean, I've never heard of that kind of a thing, that you get refugees to arrest them and take them back to the place of their pain. And so we work to see if peace can return, but we are looking for our own autonomy so we can actually rebuild our country. We have a history of very highly developed human resources, and our people are very hardworking. Of course, there is the impression that they've been infiltrated by Bia's government, but the passion for our autonomy, our independence, and our right to survive as a people is what we are looking for to reestablish. So we want to show the world that we, as English speakers, as people of this different culture from the French, we can do better. And we just are looking for the opportunity to do so.
Okay, and just for the record, I understand Paul Biya is 88 years old, and he's been president since 1982. That is going on 40 years now. Is he really the one running the crumbling country?
When you look at the decrees, when you look at letters, when you look at communication from ministries, they all talk about on the authorities of, on the high authorities of the President of the Republic. So basically, he is the one. I think even if he says, oh, I'm just having a holiday in Switzerland, in the Intercontinental Hotel, and this is everything, I think the buck actually stops with him. Right. Basically, he declared war on the Anglophones, and he's responsible, yes.
I'm not trying to absolve him at all. But mm-hmm. when you see the people that make pronouncements on the radio or TV at all, in fact, you know, he's a war criminal, and he should end up paying the price for the war crimes. But I also want to just a more visual understanding. the voice that we hear on national TV, for example, or radio, is it typically Minister of Defense, or is it some general in the Army?
It's everybody who can claim the authority to speak on behalf of the high authority of Bia.
Which is
so whether it's a minister, you know, we have a lot of nepotism there, tribalism. It's the people of his region. It's his people. So it is an unfortunate situation, but hopefully we can. I believe that once we can extricate ourselves from that, there will be a rude awakening in the country, and people will say, you know, we cannot continue with this, and they will fix things. But the Anglophones need to get out first.
I understand. To spend the remaining time on this show, which is not too much, discussing the possible solutions, the way forward, so you can give us an idea and, you know, your own thoughts on how you're going to get to where you want to go. But I want to take this opportunity before we sign off to remind listeners that we can only bring you the kind of discussion that you heard today only on WBAI because of the support of listeners such as yourself. So if you did not get a chance to do so in the first half hour, before we sign off, this is a good moment for you to pick up that phone and dial 212-209-2950. Any support for WBAI will be put to good use. You can also support us by adopting a show or a number of shows as a buddy. And you know how the buddy system works. You do that by going to give and then the number 2 and then WBAI.org. In which case, if you do adopt a buddy, the money is taken on a monthly basis, whatever you designate, to be taken out from your credit or debit card. So we now go towards the conclusion of today's discussion with our guest, who has really shed a lot of light and understanding on this conflict in Cameroon. So let's talk about the possible solutions now. Have any countries in the region or in Africa made a strong statement about this conflict, offered to mediate, or even supported the claims by the people of Southern Cameroon?
I would say not yet, even though we have been talking to some officials of different countries. And what they've given us is their personal views, which is that the situation should be taken up by the United Nations Security Council. And hopefully we should get sponsors to negotiations. But when you look at
Secretary General Antonio Guterres made a statement condemning the killings by the federal soldiers last year. Since then, has there been any move, as you say, toward getting this matter before the United Nations Security Council?
There is a Swiss move funded by the Canadian government, but that, given that Bia spends a lot of time in Switzerland, you can imagine that the Anglophones would be very, very wary of the, of any kind of Swiss mediation of the crisis, because we don't trust the Swiss. In the first instance, the first war in Cameroon among the Francophones themselves, the leaders were killed in Switzerland. You know, you had people like the leaders like Mumier, who was killed in Switzerland. So you don't, and the fact that, you know, Bia spends most of the wealth of the country lavishly living in Switzerland, you don't expect, you know, Southern Cameroonians to really be trustful of the Swiss.
Okay. So, Maggie Kilo, I want you to we don't have enough time today, but I'm going to have you back very soon so we can discuss a campaign to have the Swiss remove this corrupt kleptocratic dictator from Switzerland. And I think this is a campaign that can gain some global support. We can't allow these European countries to aid and abet people that are committing mass crimes in African countries and not also challenge them and bring them to task. What about the African Union? And I almost know the response you're going to give, but I want you to tell listeners in your own words.
Well, the African Union is a committee of friends, and I think that they're supporting their peers, especially given the fact that they believe in a regional approach. So Central Africa will get together and solve its problems. West Africa will do the same. It's unfortunate that the African Union has not taken up the case of Cameroon, not discussed it yet, so we don't expect much. But there are four scenarios that we are looking at to the peace. I mean, if you look at Biya's government, he wants one an indivisible country so that the Anglophones are totally assimilated. That is unacceptable to our people. You have some people who are saying, okay, let's get back to the federalism that we had in 1962. It didn't work. We don't trust that. And recently, when Biya talked about the special status accorded to the Anglophones, we still don't see what is in the special status. Why would he be giving us a special status? That doesn't make any sense. So our own view is to have total independence for the Southern Cameroonians to actually manage their affairs and be a strong, resilient country that Africans and fellow Africans will be proud of. So the four scenarios, only one works for us at the moment.
And you're confident that that will come into to be realized?
Yes.
Okay, so now I want you to provide your contact information, whatever contact that you're comfortable providing to listeners that might want to learn more about this situation, whether it's a website, whether it's your email, whatever you would like to provide to listeners.
Okay. We have several sites. I'm trying to look for the email address. It's Global Takumben. We are on Facebook. So if you go to Facebook and you put in Global Takumben, we'll be able to address. Yes, G-L-O for Global, G-L-O-B-A-L. Takumben is T-A-K-U-M-B-E-N-G, Takumben.
So T as in Tom, A as in Apple, K as in Kansas, U as in Umbrella, M as in Milton, B as in Bird, E as in Eric, R as in Richard,
N
as in Nancy,
yeah.
G as in George.
Yes.
Akum Bang. Okay. Yes. All right. Thank you so much. That is all the time we have. It's been very enlightening. And definitely in a couple of weeks, we'll have you back on to give us an update. Thank you for your time. Listeners, remember to also visit blackstarnews.com. And you can follow me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. That's all the time we have today. Thank you to our guests and thank you to listeners.
Thank you.
The WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible advising local management and operations, is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, September 8th at 7 p.m. An election for new board members is underway, with voting continuing until October 15th. One thing the LSB may consider is what work it will want to complete between now until December, when newly elected board members will be seated. Again, The LSB meeting is Wednesday, September 8th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Hope you will join us at the LSB.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. Washington, D.C. police have released body camera footage from the officers who killed 27-year-old Antoine Gilmore. Officers found Gilmore asleep in his car last Wednesday before opening fire. The video shows officers attempting to wake Gilmore by tapping on his window and shining flashlights in his car. When Gilmore woke up, the car began to move. Police asked him to stop the car, and he did. But when the car began to move again, officers shot at him 10 times. Gilmore was taken to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. In a press conference, Police Chief Conti said that it is hard to tell what the officers were threatened by because their gun shield was in the way. D.C. resident Jordan White recorded the incident. At least 8 officers can be seen in Jordan White's video. Neither the body cam footage nor White's recording shows Gilmore's window roll down or any gunfire coming from his car. Police Chief Conti says that although it is against Metro Police policy to shoot at a moving car, the incident is still being investigated to determine if the officers are guilty of acting unlawfully. Janice Lewis-George, council member for Ward 4, said on Twitter, quote, "Sitting here trying to figure out how law enforcement can successfully de-escalate a white domestic terrorist in a truck threatening to blow up the Capitol with a bomb, but not a black man who fell asleep in his car." Here are some words from a protester who went to a demonstration for Antoine Gilmore. This coverage was from reporter Chuck Mondiano.
Muriel Bowser. Conti,
about it.
It's time for a change in Washington, D.C. You should be out here marching with this man's family. Exactly. Where are you? Where are you? We need a change. It is time, and we are tired of dying at the hands of the police, and nobody is doing anything about it. Please, come on. Our ancestors have fought too hard for us to have all these rights, and nobody is doing anything about it. I'm begging you as a mother, as a citizen of Washington, D.C. that has seen multiple homicides, that you open up your mind, open up your heart to make a change in Washington, D.C., not just up in Georgetown or up in the area where you live at. Come to our hoods.
In coronavirus news, Florida officials said they are withholding the monthly salaries of school board members in 2 counties who voted to impose mask mandates. The move comes in spite of a court decision nullifying Governor Ron DeSantis's order to ban mask mandates in Florida. Superintendents in both counties said they would continue to mandate masks, and one school leader said her district has launched legal action against the state. At least 10 other Florida school districts have approved mask mandates, covering over half of the state's students. Florida is currently in the midst of a COVID-19 surge, with an average of more than 16,000 hospitalizations and 260 deaths per day. The Central Florida Disaster Medical Coalition recently shipped 14 portable morgues to area hospitals to handle an overflow of bodies. And despite bans on mask mandates in states like Oklahoma, Florida, Utah, Arizona, Iowa, and South Carolina, Native American tribes have defied orders by implementing their own mask mandates and vaccine directives for tens of thousands of students and faculty in schools on reservations. Many reservations are citing disproportionate rates of COVID-19 cases and fatalities during the pandemic for these actions. Jason Dropick, board president of the National Indian Education Association, commented, quote, "It's not solely a matter of someone's life, which is in and of itself hugely impactful, but also those ways of being, cultural